This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Hello and welcome to the show this week. If you're waiting to hear the voice of Scott Edwards, you're going to have to wait a little longer because this is Lynn Stobener, Laughs Unlimited's very first employee, and I have taken over as host this week. But I do have two fine, fine young gentlemen as my guests. One of them is familiar to you, the one and only Scott Edwards. Oh, there. Nice, nice, nice. And then, it's amazing how all those people simultaneously
came and left.
Quit
timing.
Clapping.
It's all timing.
It's all about timing. And that other voice you hear is the one and only drawer of the logo. Drawer? No.
Drawer. Illustrator.
Illustrator, yes. Illustrator of the Laughs Unlimited logo. Another owner of the Laughs Unlimited Club. Let's hear it for Bob Stobener.
Oh. Woo!
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you both.
So I have never done hosted a podcast, so it's probably going to be really bad, but we will have some fun. And the first thing that I want to ask you to is, how did it happen?
Well, So for my regular listeners,
what happened?
Both of you. You know that one of the very first podcasts, I kind of told the story of how the club came about, how I got the idea, and how I kind of got it going. What I wanted to do today, because we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the club this week, and my partner through my life as an entrepreneur, we'd already done a couple other businesses.
Careful.
Are you life?
Came on.
Your life partner.
Yes.
Okay.
Came on.
Settle.
As a partner in this as well. And I wanted Bob and I to share with the audience and you, Lynn, the experience we had back in August of 1980 of getting Laughs Unlimited going.
And we have to mention the others involved as well. We have we have Patty. We have Mac and Fawn. I'm getting ahead of the story, aren't I?
No. I would say, let's explain. So Patty was my first wife.
All right. Let me
you
just
interject.
Take control.
Let me just take control. Wait a minute here. Okay. All right. So you two men, young men, were born in Sacramento. Different moms, different dads. And you met, when did you meet?
Oh, we went to high school together.
Christian Brothers High School.
This is so entertaining for
class
the people.
Of 73.
I don't care. I want to know this. And you never talk to me unless I have a microphone. So just curious, we can edit this out. But like, do you guys remember ever the first meeting?
Oh, God. Well, Scott was kind of... You just came to the school. He was like the new guy in the school senior year.
I went to five high schools in 4 years, and I came in.
Came from juvie or something.
From Christian Brothers, and I was a total, and I wasn't even a nerd. I was just a geek, kind of a quiet, long-haired guy that stayed out of the way.
What happened? I've never known you to be the quiet guy.
Yeah, I don't know, but I met Bob, and then he introduced me to Mac, and then they introduced me to Jimmy, and then there was Mark Irwin and Chris Andrus, and it went on, and we ended up being a little clique the last year and a half of high school. We had some fun. We were on the yearbook.
I was going to say, what was your first creative endeavor together?
Yearbook. Bob was actually a regular on the school yearbook, and I was able to finagle my way on the senior year, but only so I could cut class. Because if you're on yearbook, they let you cut class thinking you're going to go do interviews.
You really
want to
say
pictures.
That on the air?
Well,
I think it's changed maybe.
Brother What's-His-Bucket's going to hear this.
Made it out alive.
Anyway, we made it out alive. And we did worked with George Lear. We had a music thing going. We were disc jockeys of all things.
You've jumped ahead. Our very first company was
I'm
A&A
taking over the story now.
Okay.
No, you're right. We did the A&A Restripe. We striped parking lots.
Wait, which was first?
A&A Restripe.
Restriping, yeah.
We were like 18.
So I'm sitting in my room at home, and Scott comes in the room, opens the door. Bob, I got this great idea, this is a theme that happens in our relationship.
Over
Bob
and
had this
over
great idea.
And over.
It's
and,
like,
and you feel
you know
your
the lines,
like
you know
seen.
The lines on the parking lot. So I met a guy at Holiday Inn where you were working.
That
stripes parking lots, and he gets $1 a line. And you know, $1 a line in a hotel, that line that you know has different connotations. But he was talking about the parking lot stripes, and he said, you know, we could buy a machine. They cost about $1,000, and we could stripe parking lots. Hey, Bob, you just got $1,000 from your deceased uncle or godfather. You got an inheritance. Wouldn't it be swell if you gave me the $1,000 and we striped parking lot lines?
How curious. My idea, your money. Did that ever happen again?
Never, I'm not sure. I think it might.
And what's so funny about it was that we had the machine and we had the idea, but we had no way to move the machine around. And then here comes Paul Lear, who happened to own a van. We go, you know, the van would work to take the equipment around. Paul, you want to be a partner?
It was really...
So you literally bought the machine before you thought, how should we get the machine around?
I don't know. It was in the same
all happened about the same time.
But it was very organic.
Yes.
You know, we reached out, we found another guy, and we brought him in. And that was very much like the last
This was back too. When striping parking lots was not sexy, right?
Yeah. Not
it's
at
changed
all.
A lot since, you know...
Because you guys made it... A sexy thing, right?
Well, they have those podcasts now all about striping parking lots.
Oh, sure.
It's incredible.
Really,
a lot of money.
And then we went into Sounds Good Music Productions.
Yeah, with George
and Scott had an idea that we could go around and do weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Were you working at the Holiday Inn and there was a dance?
No, it was something else. I was working as a bouncer at a nightclub. And I said, you know, if we could just, you know, get our own equipment, we could tour and do parties.
It's very much, let's put on a show, gang.
Yeah.
You know, Mickey Rooney here. He did. And then that's how that one got going.
In that case, I had the idea, Bob and Paul Lear's brother, George Lear, put in the money and we bought the equipment and went around and we were doing all kinds of schools and parties and weddings and you name it.
Yeah,
it was
so
fun.
You did. You actually, I don't know if you remember. But you guys DJed my middle school dance.
I do remember.
And
I
was
remember
like
that.
So popular because I knew the DJs.
Those were the days.
You'd have seen it.
So then a couple of years of A&A Restripe, a couple of years of that. And then I had this idea to do Laughs Unlimited. And I did some research first and I talked to some other club
Let
owners.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
Okay, so here's my side of the story.
All right.
All right, so Scott and I are driving on, I don't know, I think it was 80. And we're riding, and he says, you know, Patty had, you know, and you had just gone down to L.A., and you had been to the Comedy Store, and you guys had a great time, and Patty had said on the way back, I wish there was something like that in SAC, and all of a sudden there was this gigantic light bulb sitting right next to Scott. It was going zing, 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 and that's how he started to throw together the ideas. So he's driving, Scott and I are driving on I-5, and he brings up to me the idea, says, what would you think about opening a comedy club in Sacramento? And I swear, this was like one of the only time, not the only times, but this was one time that I just in my head, I said, oh yeah, that would totally, totally work. That's completely a great idea.
But that's the
and
truism.
That's how it started.
Most of the businesses, you went in kicking and screaming, but the comedy club you thought was a good idea. But you also weren't involved initially. In fact, Lynn was the official first employee.
I was there on day one. I just wasn't an employee.
Yeah.
I was just...
Right.
I had a real job.
Well, that's my... I do not remember, like, did you buy in at the beginning or no? Were you...
Yeah.
Like,
I had to... Let's see. I think we started the club on $2,400, if I remember. I put in $400 because we needed, I think it was we had to get the PA or the lighting.
Couldn't
or
get something that from the dance.
We made friends with Associated Sound and they helped us
out. So we had
a
local lighting company, a local AV.
Sacramento Theatrical
Lighting. I remember
lighting.
We started with $2,400 and Mac and Fawn put in, I think they put in $2,000. I think I put in $400. Again, to your theme of you have the idea, everybody else puts in the money, which is really how, you know, that's how investments happen.
Right.
You know, then that's how we kicked it off.
So going back to Bob's point, and Lynn, I know what you were asking, is that the people involved in the beginning were my then-wife, soon-to-be ex-wife, Patty, and she was around and helping. And then Bob came along and helped with artwork and the graphics and getting things going.
Did the club open up with the logo?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. I couldn't
Day
remember,
one.
Like, because I know Bob... Did the and how did the logo like how did the Joker come to be?
We were actually sitting around your mom's kitchen table talking about potential names. I remembered this place called Turntables Unlimited on Fulton Avenue, and Patty says she blurted it out.
I distinctly remember Fawn.
So somebody yelled out Laughs Unlimited and it just stuck.
Yeah.
And then Bob started working on logos and the rest is history.
Yeah. Was it folklore, the name, What Are You Laughing At? was bounced around so that if you answered the phone, you'd be going, what are you laughing at? Maybe that's just a...
No, there was actually a brief moment before all my partners got involved that I almost became a partner in a company called Laugh Stop, which was a chain of clubs in Southern California. And we were going to be one of their satellite locations.
Did I not know that?
I do remember that.
And we even got to the point where they drew up contracts. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, all the comics are saying, what are you doing? You don't need them. Do it yourself. And I canceled the contract and opened without them. And they actually threatened to sue us and sent us legal notices and stuff. It was pretty dramatic for a young guy at the time. But we made the right choice. And by the way, Laugh Stop did not last that much longer. Maybe 5-6 years, but I mean, we lasted now 40 years, so.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, so yeah. I was trying to get all the names in. So then Mac and Fawn were a big part, and then we brought in Richie, who was the contractor, had the building experience, and what was amazing was everybody had a talent. I was good at sales and marketing. Bob was always the creative side, helped with recordings and artwork and advertising, marketing-wise, print-wise. Mac was always the guy that would pick up the comics, make sure the place was stocked, set the room. And then Richie came along, and he was our builder. And it was amazing because he was so gifted. We'd just say, oh, we need this. And a couple days later, it would be exactly as we needed.
Now, Paul was the one who actually built the big room originally, right? Paul, when we moved from
Firehouse Alley.
So he put that together. Is that your memory?
No, but I'm old.
Oh, okay.
Paul Lear did the first soundbox. Well, then we should give him credit.
Paul needs to get some
because
credit.
Because I remember that was my senior, what is it, when you like work experience. I would work there in the afternoons helping build it.
No, yeah. Paul did that. But Richie built the Fair Oaks.
Citrus Heights rooms.
And
he did a lot of work. Trying to lead up to, and of course, Cassie was involved. My now wife, Jill, was very involved. But we couldn't have done it. Oh, and Chris Braun, she was very important in those early days. But none of it would have gone as far as it did without the love and the direction and the temperament of Sue Henderson.
Sue could keep it all together.
Yeah. Sue came along a little later, but she brought the mom/boss into the whole thing.
She was the adult in the room.
Yes.
Yes.
We were really just having fun, like kids.
Well, let me ask you this, because...
Please do.
Growing up, what Laughs ended up bringing to the both of you, and every one of us involved, the experiences we had, but also, like, Bob, you never were trained in directing a TV show, and... Or Scott, you never went to school for production and all that. So, name the stuff that you learned just by chance because of Laughs. Like, and what did you get to do? What special things did you get to do? Like, did you ever record an album? Did you,
write a couple books?
Right. Get sued by Disney. Come on.
We had a lot of experiences. Bob, I could throw out a few. We learned how to produce and direct television shows. We did the album. We did a few concerts. Bob, what stands out in your mind?
Oh, all that stuff. I mean, the thing is, when you go into something like what we did, it's like you don't know what you don't know. So you just do it. You're not inhibited by you think you should be doing. You're just doing it. So when we did the book... When we did our book on stand-up comedy, which was on Amazon for a number of years.
Be a stand-up comic, or just look like one.
You can mail in at the anyway.
It's on sale on my
silly
website.
Silly little book, but it's kind of cool. It's kind of funny. But it started out as just we were going to do a pamphlet or something, and then we said, okay, let's just stretch this out and make a book out of it, because we can make more money selling a book than we can a pamphlet. So, I mean, it's like necessity being mother of...
Invention.
And that's right, the inventions they live down the street. So there's that, and it's like with the TV show. Okay, so somebody wants to do a TV show. We had these, and we were just talking about this the other night. This production company came in to do the show for us, and they were charging us like $10,000 for a half hour, which was crazy money for us. And I took it upon, and I'm working with Scott, we ended up doing the edits at home and then went into the studio with the edits, which is the way you should do it, do it offline. And we got a half hour done for like $1,000. So like cut our costs way down. So, I mean, we that's how we learned how to do this stuff, is because we had to, or it wasn't going to work.
Right.
When it came to television, the first one was the Fox special, which was a one-hour show the Fox network, and they kind of guided it, and we watched a lot. And then when we did our own show, the series Laughs, and then Almost Live at Laughs Unlimited, those two series, we were 100% in control because we took everything we learned from the first show and expanded in the others. But you make a good point, Lynn. Like, we did several large concerts, whether it was Laughs in the Park or the Convention Center Theater. And we'd never done anything like that before, but we just did it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the comics were really helpful. I mean, we watched the comics. We watched how they worked. Picked that up, some of those skills.
We had a lot of support.
I feel like I've kind of done this out of order because, again,
that's okay.
First time I'm here. So, so I'm gonna go back and, Scott, you can have fun editing this. This is kind of a test for you. Anywho, so when did Bob, and how did you convince Bob, or did you have to convince Bob to come on full time? Like, when did he leave his day job?
Oh, I have this story. I was working at a...
do we have a year on this?
This is 1982, 82-ish, or 83. But it was a job that I'd had for like 8 years. And I decided, because we knew the person at this other company, it was a software company, and he came to Laughs Unlimited a lot, and he says, "Hey, Bob, why don't you come work for me?" And I said, "Oh, okay, I can do that." And went there, and that only lasted 3 months. And so I found myself
and
without
did
a job.
Look, Steve Jobs, I'm
and
done.
I said, "Yeah, that's right." I said, "Jobs, I've had it with you." But I didn't have a job, and then I just went to Scott and said, "Do you think I can just hang here for a while?" And you said, "Sure." That's pretty much my memory.
And he got a salary, and then Mac got laid off at United,
yeah,
so we
right.
gave him a job. I think Richie had a similar situation. In other words, to me, Laughs Unlimited was always a family. And Lynn, you were the beginning of that. And there was so many people that came to work for us in those first 5 years especially that everybody knew everybody. It wasn't a lot of, I mean, there were some, but there wasn't a lot of outside strangers.
Right.
It was, "Hey, Jazz Festival, we need some help. Let's call Bob Melody and Chris Andrus," and they came down and bartended. They didn't know how to bartend. All they had to do was pour a beer. We showed them how to do that. Boom, they're bartenders for Jazz Festival. I mean, a lot of friends
you
stepped
forgot
up.
To tell the one guy that you have to check the ID. Remember that?
That was fun. Yeah, Chris Andrus got busted by alcohol beverage control for not checking IDs. I will say he was distracted because his girlfriend, soon-to-be wife, was there snuggling him at the time.
Well, that would hold up in a court of law, I'm pretty sure.
Mac did go to bartending school in Old Sac.
Did he?
There was a bartending school where we ended up putting the cartoon shop.
Yep.
That was a bartending school.
So Mac went to bartending school. Jill, you and a lot of the people started off as hostesses and worked your way up. Kitchen manager, restaurant manager, club manager. There was a lot of growth for all of us going through this process. Because I, for one, didn't have a clue in how to run a club and then restaurants and this and that. It was all seat of the pants.
You had to. I mean, your experience of when we were about ready to lose the room and at the Delta Queen, the little honky restaurant over there, and losing that and almost losing your business and having to go down the street and have that all happen in the background while they were preparing to kick you out. I mean, that was a pretty cool story. You made that.
Yeah, happen. I wish... Because I was like 5, probably, you know.
You were.
I didn't, yeah. But let's go back. Let's go back.
Oh, we've been back.
I know. No, but we're going back again.
Oh, God.
Okay. Scott first. What is your strongest memory of the Delta Queen room? It could be a show, a set, a comic, the structure, whatever.
So I'll always have a little place in my heart for the original room. We're in the basement of a restaurant called the Delta Queen, and there was a banquet room. And I made a deal with the owner that if he let me use the room for free, I would set up for his banquets for the next day. And he would get the food and drink money, and I would get the door money. That's how I started. And so every day I had to go in and break down the banquet room, which set up my comedy club. We would do the show with your help and your friends of your help and friends of yours help. And then after the show, I would stay late and tear down the comedy club so they could set up for another banquet the next day. And that went on every day for a couple of years. And then, as Bob alluded to, they realized I was making money. And the wait staff that really liked me, told me that the owners were planning to boot me out without any notice and take over. And so unbeknownst to them, I went and made a deal at a different location, and we actually shut down on a Tuesday and opened up on a Thursday in the new location, and they had no clue we were doing it. They continued to try to run a comedy club, and they brought in Jesse White. Jesse White.
Who was the Maytag man. The Maytag man. He wasn't actually, I mean...
A big name.
He just wasn't a stand-up comic, and especially not a stand-up comic to this generation that we were
playing to, right?
Yeah, but he worked with Stan Freberg. He was a character actor from all kinds of television, but there was just no way that they were going to.
He
pull
was
that
an old
off.
Catskills.
He was.
Act,
and, he was,
and he came in and insulted everybody and wasn't funny, and they stayed open I think 3 weeks and then they gave up, and we were already open and off and running.
Yeah,
in the Firehouse Alley location, which turned out to be. In my mind, our best club ever.
That was a good room.
Yes,
I mean the comics loved it because it had the low ceiling and just the laughs sounded just overpowering in that room.
Oh yes, they echoed and
they echoed. Yeah, they loved that.
Bob, do you have any memories about first the Delta Queen? Any shows? Any particular?
I got really drunk there one night. I really did. I had like 3 Long Island iced teas when I thought they were just iced teas. I do remember that. But,
really?
Yeah.
You did.
But other than that, as far as a comedy room, I thought it was exciting because it was our first room, you know, and the green room was just in the electrician's room. I mean, there was all kinds of, it was terrible, but
it was really a grassroots.
It was just something to get started with.
It was a grassroots effort. And just for those of you out there that have been to a real comedy club, we got a brick stage and a professional stage and lighting. We had a little riser that was maybe 6x8. Yeah. We had a couple theatrical lights. The green room, as Bob said, was actually the electrical room for the whole restaurant. It was maybe 4 feet wide and maybe 6 feet long. And famous people would hang out in this little space and then come out.
That's right. You know, I mean, that was the room that we had the Bosom Buddies guy in, Tom Hanks.
The Bosom Buddies
Sorry.
Guy.
Yeah. Sorry, isn't that funny?
Who's that guy?
I came to Bosom Buddies.
Tim
I
Hanks.
Came to Tom,
Tom
Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
Right. Tom Hanks.
That's true. Tom Hanks worked for us.
Was on that stage. He didn't work for us, but he
was there.
That's an interesting story because he was obviously the star of that show. Saget was the warm-up act for the audience, and he happened to be on the show, actually, for one episode. Hanks was about to do the Punchline movie. He needs some stand-up experience, mm-hmm. and so that's how he came up with Bob, because we had Bob in the room that week. And he was there for the whole weekend with his wife and Colin Hanks, who was just a baby.
And we just hung out with those people. It was fun. Did he go to? Mr. Tom Hanks?
Sac State.
Yes.
Sac State. Sacramento State.
In one of the earlier podcasts, I said Davis, and I got verbally abused.
Oh.
It was Sac State.
Ooh,
but yes, we had Tom Hanks. But, you know, our very first headliner was No Slouch, George Wallace, who you can hear on another podcast. But he was also a very popular act, doing a lot of TV at the time. He was our very first headliner. The opening act has been mentioned several times, but was Gary Shandling. Not a bad way to start off the history of the club.
No, you guys really started off with a bang, talent-wise. I want to know, like, how long was it before you thought, wow, we can really do this?
It was pretty immediate.
Well, financially, it took me a full 6 months to get into the black.
Critically, we got some great reviews. We got great press for the first...
Crowd size-wise.
Room only held about 80 people, I think. It was pretty small.
Yeah, it was pretty small. I remember
a lot of poles. Remember poles right in the middle of the room, and comics would, you know, he's trying to do a bit, and there's a pole right in front of him.
I remember.
And chandeliers.
Yes.
I just remember, in my memory, things were selling out on the weekend pretty darn quick.
It was pretty...
George Wallace mentioned in his podcast that it was amazing that all the shows were sold out that first week. But, I was pretty good at marketing.
Right. I mean, you were... Yes, definitely. And they're not... I mean, Sacramento didn't have that much going on, but they obviously wanted it. And we had great crowds.
We hit... the perfect time. When we opened Laughs Unlimited, it was like the 12th club in the entire country that was doing pure comedy. There was, you know, later on there were discos that converted to comedy, and before us there were some jazz clubs that would throw up a comic between acts. And comedy, a lot of times, a lot of people don't realize, got its start as they break for the strippers at strip clubs. They'd throw a comic up just while the girls were changing their costumes or whatever. And so a lot of comics before... the 80s were performing as break acts in jazz and strip clubs. And then the comedy craze hit, and we hit it really time.
We really did hit the
But wave. You guys, but it was also, I mean, you guys did a great job of taking care of the comics, the staff, and the audience. I mean, you know.
Well, we loved what we did. I did.
I did, too. I mean, I was, it was a very exciting time.
Well, let's go to some of the favorites and worsts. Let me get here some of your favorite comics.
Well, go, Scott.
So I think some of the people that impressed me the most, these aren't my, I have some really good friends from the industry I'd like to share, but the people that really stood out in my mind that were fun to bring to the club were some of the old school guys that we had more love for than maybe our audience did, but Graham Chapman from Monty Python. Mm-hmm. We had Soupy Sales, Pat Paulson. I mean, there were some incredible people, but if you go to who I bonded with the most and who I felt I really garnered good relationships with, it was Harry Anderson, Dana Carvey. Pat Paulson and I got to be really close. I got invited to his ranch mm-hmm. and spent weeks there. I mean, it was a lot of things. Jerry Leno was very down to earth and easy to talk to at the time. But we should plug the two comics that really helped get the club going, Dave Coulier and Bob Saget. Just gave us so much information to help us succeed.
They're very nice.
And you just basically met them by walking up to them when you guys were at the...
Well, they would all recommend, you know, their friends, and they would just, I mean, because you
met...
No, but
I mean, initially, like, how did you...
Initially, I had gone to the Comedy Store in Westwood, which is an offshoot satellite of the Sunrise Club next to the college down there, UCLA, and one of the acts was Dave Coulier, and I went up after the show and introduced myself, and it went from there, blossomed from there.
And he just...
He introduced me to Saget. They introduced us to George Wallace, who introduced us to Seinfeld. It just goes on and on. Larry Miller, Mark Schiff. It was incredible. We connected the right way.
Bob, do you have any favorites? I know you do.
Well, all those people that Scott mentioned, I mean, we were. I think you'd probably said this on another podcast, but Carvey, I think we gave him his first headlining spot.
Him and actually Will Durst. In fact, when Gary Shandling
Durst?
Went on stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Paula Poundstone.
Paula Poundstone. When Shandling came out from Phoenix, we were his first road gig.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, but Yakov Smirnoff was still speaking mostly Russian when I first met him. I mean, there's been a lot of people that were totally not famous at the time that ended up having really huge careers.
Well, I've brought along today, and you can't see this, you radio listeners at home, but I've brought along...
He's got props.
It's a prop. It is the official Laughs Unlimited scrapbook without the S, so it's the crap book. Many of the comics in very early years signed the crap book, and some of which made some very meaningful, very heartfelt...
Well, let's share some
things.
Of those
well,
with
let
our
me
audience.
Read one to...
Right
Please now,
share with you.
This is from, you mentioned favorite comics. I think Larry Miller is among my favorite comics. Mm-hmm. And certainly I think that's true of all of us. We all love Larry, who was like the prototype for George on Seinfeld, by the way. That's kind of one of his many claims to fame. But anyway, he wrote a nice note to Scott here, and I think this is real touching. And this is around 1981, I think. I think the first time. For his first week, anyway. And he addressed it to Scott, even though it was
my book,
but that's okay. He said, Larry writes, "Thank you for having me here in Sacramento. It has been a wonderful week, and both the onstage and offstage time has been fun. The club is fine, is a fine idea, and I believe it will succeed. It deserves to, as do you. I will remember the pinball and the chili cheeseburgers for some time to come."
Oh.
"I hope you will be as happy to have me return as I will be. The whole experience will be a fun chapter in my adventures. But if you think I'm going to invest any of my hard-earned money in this shithole, you're out of your fucking mind, you swine."
That's not what it says.
Love, Larry Miller. That's exactly what it says. And he says, "P.S., just for spite, I'm going to keep your piece of shit belt, and I don't even like it." Now, the thing that's funny about this thing is Larry, the next time he came back, the following year, he said, "Bob, where's the crap book? I want to read what I wrote." because it was so easy. He was so he was so proud of this.
Oh, that's so
anyway,
funny.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just one of many.
Larry Miller was one of those guys.
Scott, we should print this book and sell it.
Yeah. Larry Miller was definitely one of the great acts that we had in the club, and a great, great comic. But we were really lucky. Kevin Pollak came through. He's a huge movie star now, but used to do great impressions on stage. Ventriloquist Jay Johnson, you know, got a monkey joke. Remember that? Paul Reiser and Will Schreiner, all those guys.
Lots of guys. And the women of comedy, Lois Bromfield.
Ellen DeGeneres worked our club as a feature act.
That I don't remember.
Yeah.
I have no memory of that. Is that true?
Well, we heard that she was coming and we asked you to take a week off. No, it's true. Ellen DeGeneres was a feature act.
Don't remember
that. It laughs.
Don't deny it, but I don't remember.
I opened up for her.
She closed for you, didn't she?
She closed for me, I mean.
She closed for you in Stockton, I think.
Yes, not the club, though, the college.
No. Yes. And she closed for you. Who else closed for you? There were some other acts supporting you, wasn't there?
Yeah, you did. Carvey guy.
Yeah, he closed for me.
I gave him the whole church lady thing.
Yeah,
it's
good.
He'll probably deny it because it's so difficult.
Of course. It's been
I'm not even, yeah.
It's but, like, you know, it's memories, yeah. You know, foggy memories.
As long as we're name dropping, I have a list I'd like to share.
No, I think you've had enough.
Okay.
Never mind. I want to hear his list.
No, these are comics that I think had a lot to do with our success and became part of the Laughs Unlimited family. And you tell me if you disagree. Bob Worley.
Yes.
Del Van Dyke. Mm-hmm. Ken Garr.
Yes.
Milt Abel.
Yes.
Diane Nichols. Steve Bruner.
Is it like our regulars?
Carlos Alazraki, yes. Sam Gutman, and Bruce Smirnoff. These guys were all, like you said, regular acts that came a lot, did a really good job with our audiences, and, well, Paul Robbins, definitely. But I just meant part of that I remember being such regulars at the club. They really were part of the family. They'd go to bowling night with us, on the boat with us.
That's what I also want to ask about, because I think it's very cool that not only did the comics work for you guys, but we also made them a part of our own personal lives, our families. And so what are some of your out-of-the-club experiences that you remember? What? hey, this is a family show.
It is, and that's why
I don't even know what you're talking about.
How about when we're on the boat with Paula Poundstone, and you made a joke, and she repeated it, and it stuck?
Yeah, put on the hat.
Put the hat on.
Yes.
What?
We were on the boat, and my hat blew off, and my hair, of course, looked like crap because we've been out on the river all
right.
day. Paula Poundstone sitting there, and Lynn actually said, "Put your hat on." But I didn't hear her, and Paula thought it was so funny. Paula repeated it much louder. Scott, put the hat on.
I don't know. It really wasn't that funny, but she thought it tickled her.
Yeah, she thought it was hilarious.
It tickled her.
Must have been
Was Ellen DeGeneres on the boat with us?
No,
she was skiing
was
behind
different.
The boat.
Okay.
Paula did actually, though, try to swim upstream of the river for a very long time before we told her.
Without that. Really moving.
Yes.
Because she was
going
against the
no
current.
Headway at all.
That was a little scary.
I don't remember that.
Thought she'd
go down.
Do
you remember any bowling nights?
Do you remember the bowling nights? We have actually one of the videos you just brought out. We have a bowling night on video with Dave. Couillet was there, and we were just having a great time. I think Worley was there. I think
we took Diane Nichols to the California State Fair.
Oh, I have a picture.
Shandling went bowling with us.
Yeah,
I don't think Jerry did. Jerry did not, because Jerry was going back to the condo the night we went bowling, if I remember correctly.
Afraid of a little 10-pin, was he?
Yeah, a little bit.
One of my great...
Back to the Marina Inn.
Treats was...
That's an interesting story.
We went antiquing with Harry Anderson. He was in town. He loved antiques. And he goes, "You guys have any good antique stores?" And I go, "Yeah, there's
working in one."
I
mean,
huh?
He was literally working in an antique store. I mean, Old Sack. I mean, it's full of antique stores.
No, but I don't know. But so I drove him around. We went to the antique alley and a couple places.
Oh, yeah.
And he found those punch boards that were famous back in the day where they would sell cigarettes and give away prizes. And he bought one of the boards and he made us pay to punch. And I paid him like 50 cents, and then I punched it, and I got the grand prize, which I think was $15 or something. And I said, "Well, you made me pay, so I get my prize." So he autographed it to me, and that was it. He wouldn't give me any money. He took my money, but he wouldn't give me the prize money.
Oh, that's good.
But that was fun.
That's good.
What about, like, I know we would... I remember an experience with Dana Carvey, Dave Coulier. Would you guys have any memories out on the water?
Well, we were, I don't know if you remember, but I was the day Dana got the call from Saturday Night Live, we all got in a jacuzzi together, and that was interesting because he was excited and nervous at the same time, and he knew his life was going to change.
Had he not been in a jacuzzi before?
Not with Dana Carvey. No, that was unusual.
No,
I think Dana had never been in a jacuzzi before.
Not
I think
with me.
Could, I think it, not with Scott. I mean, there were some extra bubbles in there. That's all I'm saying.
But there was other moments. Let me share one that I think nobody knows the story, so this will be the first time it's told. Tommy Chong got booked. We booked Tommy Chong a couple
times.
As a
performer in the club, not...
Oh,
this is a
boy,
comedy.
I missed that.
This is a comedy podcast, isn't it? I thought I read
where's
somewhere.
Where's the rim shot? So, I...
Oh, sorry. There you go. Those are birds.
So, no, what I was going to share is that we booked Tommy Chong. I was very excited. We were huge, you know, Cheech and Chong fans. We got Tommy to the club, and I was backstage getting ready for the end of his show, and I was emceeing, of course. And you guys don't remember, but in the Firehouse Alley, there was a little brick entryway, right, that you go through a curtain onto the stage, and I'm standing right there. And Tommy, this was the first time, he ended up working for us a couple times, but his very first show, he breaks out the guitar and goes right into Earache My Eye, which is a really hard, ba 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 ba, you know, rock and roll song. And I was so excited, I jumped up and just cracked my head open so bad it bled a little. It really shook me. I had to go and sit down. But it was, and nobody knows it happened.
Wow.
But it was so exciting to hear that song live on stage by Tommy Chong on, you know, on my stage. I was just so excited. I jumped up and almost killed myself.
Wow. Well, speaking of very special, cool, can't believe this is happening moments, let's hear a couple more of those, Bob. Do you ever have, like, what is like a memory?
Well, what has Scott not told? I mean, I'm sure by now you've told everything. You've told the Robin Williams story?
No.
Oh, okay. So, Robin Williams is doing a concert in Sacramento, which myself and a friend attended. And we had the idea. I'm sure Scott was way ahead of it, but he booked Jeremy Kramer for that week at the club. So knowing that Robin and Jeremy were good friends, we thought there might be a good idea that Robin would come over after the show and do a set
at
the club.
It was a San Francisco connection.
Yeah, because he was a San Francisco comic. So sure enough, we're, you know, my friend and I are going to Laughs after the show, and sure enough, Robin shows up, and he wants to go on stage, and he must have done 40 minutes. I mean, I remember...
That was nonstop.
It was, right, it was just...
That.
And he was just
bam, bam, bam.
And then, so that was a very, obviously, special night, and Scott went up there to introduce him, and he just had so much pride in his voice. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Robin Williams." And the crowd just, you know, it was a small room of maybe 50 people.
No, I remember that night. There was not 50 people.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was very slow. Maybe 20, 30.
Yeah.
So,
and do you remember when the lady stood up in the audience and just started, like, thanking him so much for coming to the club?
Well, yeah. I mean,
was that you, Lynn?
The crowd was just astounded.
Yeah.
And so Robin does a set, and, you know, we shoo the audience out. And then we close the room and we go back to the comedy condo, and Robin's just hanging out with us for the night. And it was kind of cool for me because I got to help him, you know, show him the way out of town. He followed my car. Wow. But anyway, no, it was great to, and I don't know. And you were there that night,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It was weird in that, you know, the comics were like on one side of the room, and then our team was like on the other side of the room. And it was like there were two little, normally we're all just hanging around together.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular night, it seemed like the comics were in a world with Robin, and we were over here in the kitchen, you know, talking about whatever normal people talk about. But Robin would go back and forth. So he'd spend some time over there with them, and then he'd come back, and then we would hang out and just talk about whatever we were talking about. And then he'd go back and hang with the comics.
He was a comics comic. He liked hanging.
But I think he was aware of everybody.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Really
definitely
generous.
Definitely wanted
with his
to make
time.
Sure. Yeah.
Everyone
wanted to sure.
Have a good
and sadly,
time.
There weren't
yeah.
cell phones, so we didn't get any good pictures. No. But it was a real special moment we'll never forget.
Yeah, that was very, very cool.
Well, okay. Those are special moments.
What was the
moments.
Question again?
I don't know. do you have any, like, going horribly wrong moments or worst moment? Or was there, like,
it's not a bad moment.
Well, there was a time you put your finger in the fan and almost cut your finger off.
Well, that
and
happens
then there was
repeatedly.
The time the customer cold cocked you in the hallway as he was leaving.
Oh, yeah, I did get belted.
Which was, made no sense because there was no rhyme or reason.
I was kicking him out and I was, you know, he was upset.
What's funny is that we remember the good things, the comics, the people, the interacting with the positive audience. But in reality, as the club owners, we're also the bouncers. Yeah. And, you know, how many yuck patrols do we clean up, Lynn?
Oh, I forgot that good term. Lord. Oh, my
yuck God. Patrol?
The yuck patrol.
That, for you kids listening at home, that is vomit.
Yes. Yeah. You know, boops. And it was, and I would dig in just like the staff to help clean up. It was, there was nobody that was better than another person. It was something that we all had to deal with. But, so there was a lot of challenging times. I mean, as much as the club was a success, there was a lot of times that we didn't get a paycheck in order so that we could cover the comics checks.
Well, the employees.
And the employees checks. Yeah. I mean, it was not a big financial success, mostly because the guy running the show was horrible with money.
Yeah. You kids at home want to start up your own business, you know, get an adult to handle the money for you. I have a bizarre story, and I don't even know the comic's name, so this probably doesn't make any sense to you, but it's one of the truly bizarre moments in my tenure in the comedy room. So I'm bringing the headliner comic back to the condo, and I can't even remember the names. But and this is when we're at Governor's Square, you know, the governor's, which is another story that's kind of interesting.
That's where Stan Atkinson lived.
Yeah, Stan lived there. But I'm opening up the door, letting the comic in, and you open the door, and here is this naked opening act lying on the floor, spread out. It's just naked as a jaybird. It's just, and he's the opening act. And
would it have made a difference
literally.
If he was the middle act?
I don't think I would have. I think I would have noticed him more. But yes, there he was, just right on the floor, and we just stepped over him and said, "Oh, that's your opening act." And he goes, "Oh, okay, great." We just walked right by. Anyway, it was just, you know, you have to have that mental picture. This
yeah,
naked
that's not
man just
you'd
lying
expect.
On the floor, and he was perfectly fine. He had just passed out from God knows what.
Oh,
anyway.
Well, this was the age of drugs, and which we didn't partake in. At least I didn't. Lynn.
No, I mean
Bob.
I heard some stories. No.
No. We were actually a pretty square
group club.
And I think that might be one of the reasons why the comics kind of like this. And a few of them said that is because they were all from, most of them were from LA, and it was very LA-ish, and it was like you know very competitive, and there was a lot of drugs, and it was a lot, you know, it wasn't a great scene.
Well,
but
the
they came
owners.
Back to us, and they came up here, and it was like, oh, man, this is like semi-normal. My town I grew up in.
I remember
I can breathe here a little bit.
Having a couple of comics to mom's house for, you know, like Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, that was just so cool.
Yeah.
So, Lynn, who did you really enjoy seeing or working with?
Besides us.
Besides, I mean, everybody that you really mentioned and, you know.
Nobody stood out? Gallagher?
Yeah, I was just about to say. Always loved Jack. Always loved Dana Garvey, and I always loved Jay Johnson. And I had a big crush on Jay Johnson. And I love working with Carla. I love working with Paula. There's a ton, and there's a ton that you know. No, people might not necessarily know that. Good Lord, we still quote Cody Blaine's bits on the
Mango.
Get it off me.
Well, I'll mention a couple acts that you guys could maybe comment on that were different, unique. One was Amazing Jonathan.
Yes, who has have you seen? He's got a documentary.
Just saying he was a little out of his mind. And then remember Joel Hodgson working for us. And then he got Mystery Science Theater after his job with Mattel. And just his career, you know, he was really into toys. He was really fun and creative on stage. Not really a great comic. But
I thought Joel was hilarious. He just had an off-center timing.
He was off-center.
Yeah, it was very funny.
No, I liked him, too. I'm just saying that he wasn't as popular with the audiences as other people. Because of his love of toys and this childlike attitude, he got a job in the toy industry, which immediately got him into Mystery Science Theater 2000, I think.
I think he created it.
He was able to sell it. Did great. But Amazing Jonathan was another guy that was right on the verge of crazy, but really, really funny.
Yeah.
And very animated.
I have another reading.
Oh.
Another reading from the crap book. From the crap book. To Bob, thanks for having my dress cleaned. And thanks for making me sore. You're a great guy. Gary Shandling.
Oh, God, that warms my heart.
Wow.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Is there anything else in this?
That's very touching.
Crap book. By the way, listening audience of millions, I am Bob's sister, and I worked at Laughs from the beginning. And I have never heard or seen this book before
until
today.
Tonight. Isn't that incredible?
So I don't even know who he is.
Bruce Baum writes, never suck on a goat.
Well, good advice.
Which now he tells me, you know, because... Yeah.
Who knew?
Wow. My mom used to say that, but...
Yeah.
But let's... another act that might be fun to bring up. Comic ventriloquist Dave Strassman, always very creative, but remember when he was able to... take his ventriloquist figure. He's doing this whole act, a normal ventriloquist bit where him and the character, I don't remember the name, would argue.
Chuck Wood.
And then he would leave the stage, and there he had the perfect pregnant pause, and then
the doll was sitting up.
Yes.
Just sitting by itself.
Right.
We have it on video.
Looking straight ahead.
And then all of a sudden it moves its eyes, and the audience always screamed. And, of course, they're thinking of Chucky, but this thing would come to life, and then he would talk through it even though he's not there. I thought that was genius.
Yes.
One of the greatest things we ever saw.
Do you guys remember Kevin Nealon's bit?
I remember when.
No. When he used to bring a girl on stage to do her charcoal drawing. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I always wondered if that was going to ever go way south, but it never did. But he was... Yeah. So
he just
funny we never wrist. Mentioned Kevin Nealon.
I love Kevin Nealon, but he's actually one of the. You know, when you see people in talent, and sometimes you try to guess who you think's going to make it and who you don't think's going to make it.
You didn't think Kevin was going to.
Well, I was happily surprised, but I just.
He was different. He wasn't a straight
based on his act. I mean, I'm sure he did a lot of other stuff. Yeah, he was very funny, but I guess I just you know well, not
he's
that
a great
he,
comic. I mean, he's a great comic actor. I mean, he has a lot of skills. But have you seen his podcast or heard his podcast or seen his podcast?
No. The YouTube, the hiking one.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Kevin. That's awesome. You got to try to get
him.
Get Kevin on the show.
Don't tell him I said that, though.
Another act.
We'll plug his podcast for the 10 people who are listening.
Another act that was really different, really unusual, and made us laugh, I think, even more than the audience. Peter Gahlke.
Gahlke.
He was so funny. The two bits that I'll never forget was he'd get a volunteer on stage, and he'd lay across some chairs, and then he'd have the volunteer, usually a woman, and he goes, I'm going to levitate. And they'd pull the chair away, and he would slap down on the ground as hard as could be. And then they'd pull his feet out, and the feet would slam down. And he goes, okay, I'm levitating right now. It's just centimeters, but I'm off the ground. Yeah. It was hilarious. And then the other one is he was doing a bit, and he pulls out a rope, and he threw it out the middle aisle of the club, and it would pretend to rappel into the audience. He would grab some girl and climb back up on the stage. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to mention Torso Man.
Oh, well, that's...
Which Torso I Man. Actually Genius. Did yeah. when I worked for the blood bank. I did it at a mobile blood drive.
Did you
stole
really?
His you stole his bit? I gave him credit.
So tell him about the bit.
He had a very long shirt on, and then he had like, bendy, stretchy, elasticy pants. And he would do this thing where he pulled the pants down a little bit. All the way to his knees, and he put a pillow in the rear part, and then with the long shirt, so it made him look like he was like, you know, three-quarter torso, so he was Torso Man, and, you know, the way that he'd walk, it would make his little butt kind of wiggle, and it was really funny. It was very, very funny.
It was hilarious and very
original.
It's
a very visual bit. So, but if you want to write into Scott, we can give you some directions. We can send you a PDF or something, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know.
I don't think we have Torso Man on tape, but that would have been a one to have.
Emo Phillips was another favorite.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Emo Phillips.
And we had him more than a few times. He was
really strange, but people loved him. He had just such
a unique timing, and his material was just perfect. It was great.
How about the Regurgitator?
Yeah, the Regurgitator.
He was actually on America's Got Talent and did well. I think he made it to the finals. But he was in our club several times where he would swallow light bulbs and goldfish and then cough them back up. It was so disgusting, but really wowed the audiences.
Well, yeah, and to this day, I still don't know how he does it because we went to Fridays to TGA Fridays after the show, and he ate and brought back up the salt and pepper shaker.
Totally
in
dry.
Front of us, and we didn't know. It's, but he's an amazing also magician, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't trust him.
Well, great magicians. We were very lucky to have John Carney, who is one of the greatest close-up comics ever to live. Not famous, but an amazing close-up comic. And then, of course, Martin Lewis and Great Scott. I mean, you can't listen to a certain album. Well, I'm having a brain fart.
Santana Abraxas. He used the first side of that. The first three songs of that album. And yes, you can't hear that without seeing his act.
Great Scott.
You also can't listen to I Get Around by the Beach Boys without expecting the scratch and
from the opening of the club.
I mean, it's just impossible.
Funny story. Everybody out there that's with PETA, turn off your radio. But there was one time that Great Scott had to delay his set, and during Abraxas Santana's song, he would make about 20 birds appear and then make them disappear. And he did it every night. And we all kind of knew how he did it. The secrets of magic we won't share. But on one particular night, because I think it was Yakov refused to split his act up or go first, he went out and did it, and he kept appearing dead birds or hyperventilating
right,
birds.
Right, because he would generally, when they were well, you know, oxygenated, they would get in the cage on their perch after they then appeared. Oh, I'm happy, I'm a bird, yep, true. These he had to kind of just prop up and lean against the side of the cage.
He's trying to lean them and balance them. Why'd he just put the bottom, the poor dead pigeon? It was so sad, and it's hysterical at the same time, because he didn't change his act.
No.
He just kept going, dead bird after dead bird.
Improvisation for Scott was not a thing. He could, it has to roll the way it's programmed.
So
the first animatronic magician.
It was dark humor, because everybody felt, I mean, the people in the audience were horrified as these dead birds kept coming out. But poor Scott, he didn't have a choice.
He didn't have a choice.
He was actually helping him get out and getting fresh air.
Yeah. He was like flicking the wings so it looked like it was alive.
Yeah. I don't know.
I
don't know if any of them actually died. I think a couple did, but let's say they didn't. They lived, but they needed
fresh
air.
Right.
There they go now. Vegas. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, it was in Citrus Heights, and it was a magician, and I think his girlfriend was his assistant, and he was just a dick. I don't know. We only had him one time, and he did this thing where he made a cat appear, and it had to do with, since he was a jerk. Yeah, I'm going to say it. That he had a sack on the back. On his back, that he makes the cat appear. But and I was emceeing, so I brought him up. So I was still backstage, and all I hear is the beginning of the his act. He's, ladies and gentlemen, I'm gonna, and you hear thud.
It had fallen out of the sack.
The sack had fallen, and the cat's in it.
I wasn't there for that.
No, but it was one of those
hilarious.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy kind of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had great comics. I think we've expressed that. I think we had really good audiences.
I forgot to ask. I'm sorry.
I know we had great audiences.
Well, I want to share a story that one time I did my bit and emceeing and a little bit of comedy if I thought it was funny. And we got done, and this very tall, and all I could see was this tall woman, was just standing up and applauding, oh, Scott, and kind of a feminine voice. And as I got closer, it turned out, of course, it was a transvestite, and she wanted to give me a room key. So that was a little weird.
Magic night for you, huh?
Yeah.
That's
but that,
great.
You know, that was
good
a unique
you,
audience experience. And I put him down very gently. It's, oh, thank you, but I,
I got a room key offer, too, but he was a successful comedian. Just saying.
Who was that?
Richard Jenny.
Richard Jenny offered you a room key?
He's the one that I had taken him back to the hotel to drop him off. And he got out of the car, and I said, oh, Richard, wait, you forgot your key. And he's like, take a hint. And I'm like, nah, I'm okay. And then the next night, when he had to be picked up, I sent Ben Tony because I didn't want to do it. And he answered the door in his robe.
Ooh, I don't remember that. Wow. Richard Jenny was a little... I just saw him in a movie. He's in The Mask as the sidekick for the star of the movie, who is...
Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Richard Jenny
is his co-star in that. I did not know that he showed up in his robe the next day. That's
no, he
that's
did
awkward.
Not show up. I mean, he answered the door.
He answered the door. Right.
Well, how about you want to share your Pat Paulson backstage story?
Well, it wasn't Pat. I think I already
well,
did.
Well, Pat Paulson invited us backstage. Yeah. Well, for this audience, real quick version.
Well, we went up to Tahoe because Pat Paulson was there, and you were friends with him. And he had opened up for the Smothers Brothers.
He invited us backstage.
He invited us backstage.
For the post-show party.
And I was thinking, oh, this is cool, because I was just, not so much for me, but I was even thinking, I don't know why I thought, oh, my, this is my dad's era, but it's not. It was never. I just thought it was cool that I was meeting, meeting Tommy Smothers. But Tommy, like...
And Dick Smothers.
He was there. But,
oh, yeah.
But Tommy was the one who actually, he kind of sat me down, like he grabbed my shoulders and he sat me down on the couch. And then he kind of laid me on the couch down, and then like he crawled on top of me, and I'm like, not, you know, it's everybody's kind of laughing nervously, and I didn't know what to do. But
and then
it
Pat
was
Paulson yells out, "What are you, dry hump here?" He said something really disgusting.
Meanwhile, the guy, classical gas guy, was playing the piano.
Mason Williams.
Yeah, Mason Williams. So really? It was a very cool, inappropriate experience.
Yeah. But well, that's your Me Too moment.
Oh, no, Pat Paulson makes a comment.
Yes, it was my Me Too moment. I tried to start it back then. No,
Pat Paulson
didn't
started.
Click. It didn't hit.
Pat Paulson started, Tommy's got a boner. Yeah, Tommy's got a boner. God. And it was really awkward for me because, like you said, these are big celebrities and big thing, and yet I brought you up there, and you're like my little sister, and I'm all of a sudden he's on top of you, and I'm like... Tommy, come on. Yeah. Funny. Come on, get off. You know, I mean, it was weird.
Excuse me, Mr. Smothers, put it away.
It was a weird moment.
Well, right, it was a different era.
It was. So we had a lot of fun. Lynn, how would you like to wrap this up?
As host of this podcast, I've been a host for about 57 minutes now. I just want to say thank you for letting me be a part of it, and as well as letting me be a part of the Laughs Unlimited Club and family. And do you have any?
Well, I'd like comments? To say something.
Go ahead, Bob.
Leave, and I don't. And I think
and
we
without
should
your
say
book.
It. No, this is. I think we should be extremely proud. I don't know if anybody in Sacramento even understands this, but I think Laughs Unlimited, and it's still running. They're doing everything they can to keep it going, but they've been going straight for 40 years now. It has to be the longest running live show, continuous live show in Sacramento history. I can't think of anything that's lasted longer.
No, it definitely
longer.
Is.
Is there? Can you think of it? I mean, Music Circus is seasonal.
I'm very proud of it.
Oh, I'm extremely proud of it. And I'm not just saying that because I was a part of it, but I just think we the club brought a lot of historical level talent to this community that they wouldn't have seen at that level if this hadn't appeared. I mean,
and luckily Sacramento was a little starstruck. They love the fact that we're bringing in
and they weren't jaded.
People.
They appreciated, and I'm not sure they still do, but they appreciated talent when they saw it. And the people that we had come through, a lot of the name dropping we did tonight, but not even people that were really necessarily going to make it in comedy. I mean, I'm thinking of somebody like Denny Johnson who's got a wonderful set. He was a great act.
Rope
fantastic.
Comic.
If he's listening to this, I know I'm following him on Facebook. He might hear this. Denny was a fantastic comic. But he never got to the level that people would know him.
Oh, Diane Nichols.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that we worked with who had a lot of talent. You know, more than you would expect to
more
see.
More than some people that are famous.
More than some people that are famous.
It just shows that some people make it, some don't. Yeah. It's just a lucky moment.
I think I almost appreciate those comics more than the ones that did make it because, we got to see them, and nobody else will.
Well, I always thought, I take pride in the fact that the comics loved working the club.
Yeah.
And that has everything to do with you two and the other owners and then the Sacramento crowd because
Richie, Millie, Mac, Fawn, Patty.
We made it wasn't another road gig for them. You know, a lot of road gigs can be horrible because a lot of comics, they just go in there, then they go back to either a disgusting condo or a hotel, and it's very impersonal, and it's just there's not any interaction between the stage. Comic goes into town, gets on stage, and then
it's a very lonely job being a stand-up comic on the road, and we made it a little less lonely.
Right.
In fact, you played touch football with Dave Coulier.
It was mud football. And yes. It was part of...
I heard there was some touching, too.
Well, we wanted to, you know, the point was to see how disgustingly muddy we can get. Yeah. And we did. That sounds wrong, but no, that was very...
Well, I thank you for hosting my podcast.
Sorry.
And...
shouldn't you have hit the record button?
We had a chance to do a lot of name dropping, and I really appreciate that you, Lynn, were willing to host this. Bob, this is the first time I've gotten you on mic, even though I've mentioned you a dozen times in the previous podcast. But for us to come together on this, the anniversary time, our 40th anniversary of the club, again, it wouldn't have happened without us as a family, and it wouldn't have, and everything we did, I'm very proud of.
Me yes. too.
I would have to concur with your findings.
And with that, we'll end it.
Peace out, people.
Thank you. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Laughs Unlimited.
Happy birthday.
Why don't we play the Laughs Unlimited theme song by Robert Aguayo?
It's been heard, but we
why don't we play it again?
Okay.
Here it comes.
All right. Cue the record player.
Hi, everybody. It's Uncle Bob, the comedy mariachi.
Hi, Uncle Bob.
These laughs are your laughs. These laughs are my laughs. They're your memento from Sacramento. If you're inhibited, try Laughs Unlimited. These laughs will make you and me. Come on.
These laughs are your laughs.
Yeah.
These laughs are my laughs.
Yeah.
They're your memento.
From where?
From Sacramento.
What if?
If you're inhibited.
Yeah. Cancer.
These lives will make you and me.
Come on, help an old man out.
These lives will make you and me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.